You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect.
I just want to be a sheep, ba 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 ba. I just want to be a sheep, ba 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 ba. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. I just want to be a sheep, ba 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 ba. Join in this time. I just want to be a sheep, ba 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 ba. It's easy. I just want to be a sheep, ba 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 ba. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. I just want to be a sheep, ba 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 ba. And hopefully by the end of this morning, you'll realize how appropriate those words are. Psalm 23 is what we're focusing on this morning, and it's a very familiar psalm. In fact, it's probably one of the most quoted, best known, most loved passages in the entire Bible. So there's no pressure on me at all today to present this to you, okay? If you grew up in church, you probably know Psalm 23 by heart. And if you don't know it by heart, you can probably give me a pretty good paraphrase. But even for people who have never stepped foot in a church, they've probably been exposed to this psalm at some point in time or another. Let me give you a couple examples. Psalm 23 is often recited at funerals, and if they don't recite it, it's found on that memorial card that you get when you walk into the funeral home. It's been sung about, at least bits and pieces of it, have been included in some popular songs by artists such as Pink Floyd, The Grateful Dead, U2, Coolio, Kanye West, Marilyn Manson, strange, and Jay-Z. And I don't listen to those artists, but I Googled it, and Google's right all the time. So there you go. Psalm 23 has been featured in films, such as The Titanic. It's actually being recited as the ship sinks. It's in Saving Private Ryan, War Horse, and Terminator Salvation. And Psalm 23 made the news twice on September the 11th, 2001. And if you remember, that's the day of the terrorist attacks. And Flight 93 had been hijacked over Pennsylvania. And Todd Beamer, who's not a relation of mine that I know of, but Todd Beamer and the other passengers were gathered in the back of the plane, huddled together. And Todd made a call on the airphone. And he ended up talking to an airphone supervisor. And that supervisor let them know what they were in for, what had been happening as far as the hijacking and the crashing. And on the phone, Todd Beamer recited with his supervisor two things. He recited the Lord's Prayer, and he recited Psalm 23. Right before he uttered his famous words, "Let's roll." And then later that evening, when George W. Bush was addressing the nation about the terrorist attacks, he also quoted from Psalm 23. When Sean asked us a couple months ago to pick a psalm that we were going to teach, I didn't choose this one because it was the most popular or because Kanye West sang about it, but I had my reasons. I've spoken before about my grandfather and my dad, and my grandfather was a pretty interesting fellow. He loved baseball, especially the Yankees. He was crazy about the Yankees. He loved sorting coins that he got from the bank, and that's something he passed on to me. I loved doing that. He loved Red Man chewing tobacco, and he always had a side of chew. His teeth didn't love that so much. He never had teeth that I can remember. He was a tough old bird. And one of his famous expressions to my brother and to myself, he would say this. He'd say, "You'd rather kick a grizzly bear in the butt than to mess with me, boy." He was a funny old fella. He lived by himself in Tyrone until about the age of 90 or 91, took care of himself all those years. But at that point, he suffered a stroke. And that stroke left him mostly paralyzed and definitely mentally impaired. And if you have a loved one that suffered a stroke, you know how difficult that was for me and for people that knew him. Pap would spend the next 2 years of his life in that nursing home bed, and sometimes he knew who we were, sometimes he didn't. And several months after I graduated from college, we knew that Pap's time was getting close. In other words, he was dying. And so I went to visit him in the nursing home, and my dad was there. And my dad asked me to read something to my grandfather from the Bible. And specifically, he asked me to read Psalm 23. My dad, who was not a Christ follower, who, as far as I know, didn't read the Bible, who had only stepped foot in church a few times in my life, knew Psalm 23. And he knew that it would be appropriate for a time such as this. So I read Psalm 23 to my grandfather, and it was, truthfully, it was the last thing that I ever spoke to him. So this psalm means something special to me. The other reason I chose this psalm was because of its focus on agriculture, its focus on farming. And as many of you know, from the age of 12 until I got married, I lived on part of my grandmother's farm over in Warriors Mark, Huntington County. I grew up swimming in the creek. It's creek, not creek. We picked sweet corn by the bagful, okay? And I'm a sweet corn snob, I will admit that. And I stacked hay in the hay mound, and I did it in cutoff shorts. And I ended up with scratched up legs, but that was okay because it was just too hot. I milked plenty of cows. I shoveled lots of poop. I had access to 300 acres, and I loved every moment of it. And if you've ever grown up on a farm or you know people who have, there is this draw, this connection that you have with farming that never leaves. And I can't explain it, and it's just... It's a very powerful force within me, and it's one of the reasons why I'd love to own a farm someday. And my wife and I aren't quite on agreement with this, and we're still working on that, I think. Maybe. But that's the other reason. Even though I was drawn to this Psalm's farming theme, kind of the agricultural theme, I had never really taken the time to study it, to study all the imagery that's used throughout the passage. And what I realized was this. If you don't understand the imagery, what they're talking about, then you really can't understand the richness of this psalm. Let's go ahead and read it before we go any further, okay? The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Let's give a little quick background here. Not all of the Psalms have an identifiable author, but this one seems to. We see at the start that David wrote this psalm. It's actually written in there, a Psalm of David. That was written by one of the editors of the text at some point in time. And we think that David might have written up to 80 of the other Psalms. This is what the scholars believe, at least. David, of course, was an early king of Israel, but as most of us probably know, he was not born of royalty. In fact, he had been a shepherd around Bethlehem when he was younger. Well, how do we know this? Well, in Scripture, in 1 Samuel, it talks about this. You see, Saul was the first king, but Saul had fallen out of favor with God. He had done some things. He had disobeyed God. So God said, well, Saul, you're not going to be king anymore. And so God chose Samuel the prophet. Remember, a prophet is just a spokesman for God. He said, Samuel, I want you to go and anoint or choose the next king of Israel. And so Samuel went to the house of Jesse, and Jesse had lots of sons. And so what Jesse did was he paraded all these sons. He had seven older sons, good-looking, tall, whatever, big, strong, strapping. He paraded them in front of Samuel, but God said, that's not it. None of them are the chosen king. So Samuel ended up asking Jesse, are these all the sons you have? Well, no, I still have the youngest. He's out tending sheep. And, of course, the youngest was David. So David was a shepherd. And it's really important to understand this background about David because it helps us to understand the images and what he used of the sheep and the shepherd. It's because it's what he knew. He knew sheep. He knew being a shepherd. It's what he related to. He had street cred in this area. And when I think of this idea, there's a country song by Randy Travis, and it's called Deeper Than the Holler. And in this, he's singing about love. He starts off the song by talking about city singers. Now, there's singers from the city who are talking about love that's deeper than the oceans and higher than the stars. But Randy's from the country, and he doesn't know much about those things, those oceans and such. So he sings about what he does know. And if you know the song, he sings about hollers and rivers and pine trees and robins and whippoorwills. And he describes the love of his woman in those terms. And it's because it's what he knows. And it's the same way when we look at David's psalm here. He talks about sheep because it's what he knows. When we read the psalm, it's easy for us to think that maybe David wrote this when he was a young boy, when he was out tending the flock. But actually, this probably wasn't the case. When scholars have looked at this psalm, and there's some clues and some studies that they've done, they think that actually happened, that he wrote this psalm when he was later in life, after he was already king. And specifically, they think that he wrote this psalm after he had been driven from Jerusalem by his son, Absalom, who was trying to kill him. Real quick background. Absalom, his son, wanted to be king. And because he wanted to be king, he started turning the people against his father, David. And so David had to flee for his life. And so this psalm was written from a time of heartache and struggle and despair and frustration and fear. You know, all those things you feel when your kid's trying to kill you, right? It wasn't written. David did not write this psalm when everything was going well, when there was rainbows and unicorns and kitties and flowers and whatever other images you conjure up. And I don't know why we do that, but that's what we think of. We spent, a couple months ago, we spent some time learning how to study the Bible and the importance of really delving into the text. You know, what is this text trying to tell us? Why did the author choose the words and the phrases that he did? You know, why did he choose this imagery? How is he trying to use those words to connect to us or to connect to the audience that he's speaking to? And here's where I want to spend some time this morning, because this is what I think is so neat about this psalm. So here we go. Let's get started. Let's start in verse 1. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. To begin with, we see Lord here written in capital letters, and can't really appreciate there, but in the Scripture it's written in capital letters. And we've learned previously that whenever you see this, that it means Yahweh, or the Hebrew name for God. And Yahweh, that name originated from a story back in Exodus when God was speaking to Moses through the burning bush. And God tells Moses that he's going to use Moses to lead the Israelites out of Egypt into the promised land. And of course, this freaks Moses out a little bit. And he says, but what? Who am I going to say is sending me? You know, they're not going to believe me. Who should I say is sending me? And God responds, I am who I am. Tell them I am has sent me to you. And a form of this I am phrase is the word Yahweh. From that moment on, the Jewish people knew their God as Yahweh, or the God who is. So David is making it very clear from the beginning of this psalm, beginning of this passage, he's not talking about some random God. And of course, there's lots of different gods at that time. He's talking about the one true God of Israel. He's talking about the God of their ancestors, the God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, the God that led them out of Egypt, the God who was, the God who is, and the God who will be. He's talking about Yahweh. The next word is here seems a little insignificant. Okay, we look past it pretty quick. But David is making a pretty defining statement. He's confident in what he's about to say. He's not wishy-washy. You know, he doesn't say, the Lord may be my shepherd, or maybe not. He doesn't say the Lord could be my shepherd, maybe he can't. He's saying the Lord is my shepherd. And he's also saying it in the present tense. In other words, it's active at the time that he was writing. So David didn't say the Lord was my shepherd, you know, back when I was palace. I knew it wasn't a castle. Back in the palace. It wasn't just when everything was going well for me. And he's not saying that the Lord will be my shepherd when all this mess gets cleared up. He's saying that the Lord is my shepherd in the midst of all this turmoil and stress and strife and right where David is finding himself. We may also be quick to overlook the word my, okay? After all, it doesn't even qualify for a Scrabble word, at least not in adult Scrabble, maybe in kids Scrabble. But here it's speaking of a personal connection. It's this relationship between David and his God, Yahweh. And in Israel at this time, this would have been very strange. People did not have a personal relationship with God. They would have talked to him in more of a corporate setting or more of a group. So in other words, it would have been very common for someone to say, the Lord is our shepherd, or the Lord is Israel's shepherd. But to hear the word my, this personal connection, that was very strange. But here David is referring to him as my shepherd. Some of you are starting to freak out a bit. You're like, holy cow, he's picking every freaking word in this whole passage. Don't worry, not going to do that the whole time. But we got to go through a few more of these things. We next come to this concept of a shepherd. And it really invokes two different images for the people that have been hearing this text. One of an individual caring for sheep, and one of a leader leading or shepherding his people. Let's talk sheep first, okay? Sheep were important animals to ancient Israelites, specifically what's called the fat-tailed variety of sheep. And these were important because they would store all this fat in their tail. And if they were going through a time where it was hard to find food, then they would be able to live off this fat. And when I typed fat-tailed sheep into Google, this is what I get. They look like fat butt sheep to me. Whatever. I think the principle is still the same. Okay. Sheep provided the Israelites meat. They were cloven hoof ruminants. Okay, what's that mean? Well, their feet, they had a cloven, a split hoof, and they chewed the cud. That's what ruminant means. Okay, so they were clean to eat in Jewish culture. And you have to contrast this to a pig. They have a split hoof, but they don't chew the cud, so they were not clean animals back in the Jewish time. And that would be a problem for us today because we like our bacon so much. So sheep were able to be eaten, and they were. Aside from meat, sheep would have been used for their wool. They would have used it for clothing and for trade. They would have used them for their milk. If it tastes like goat milk, count me out. I'm not a big fan of goat milk. For their skins and for fertilizing crops. Actually, from what I've read, sheep poop is a very good fertilizer, and it doesn't smell that much. So kids, if you take nothing else away from today, sheep poop doesn't smell. There you go. There's your lesson for today. Sheep were also very important in sacrifices. And we learn throughout the Old Testament that sheep, like an unblemished lamb, was used to atone for the people's sins. That's what they would sacrifice to please Yahweh. They would also use the blood of the lamb during Passover. So sheep were used in a lot of different ways. Now, I said I've spent a lot of time around cows, but I've not spent a lot of time around sheep. But from what I understand, sheep are not the smartest animals in the barnyard. Chris, do you have any experience with this? Yes? Yeah, they're not smart. They're stupid. Okay, they're stupid. Well, I'll tell you what one sheep farmer wrote on a blog. Okay, this is great. So a sheep farmer, he owns sheep, he wrote this. I am sure that every lamb is born with a brain. However, they seem fearful that using it before the age of two will cause it to wear out prematurely. Before the age of two, it seems like most sheep have the IQ of a rock. After the age of two, they do seem to get a little smarter, like maybe an intellectual head of cabbage. So, first thing to note, sheep are not smart, okay? Some other characteristics of sheep that are important. They cannot easily defend themselves. I mean, what are they going to do? They're going to attack you with their woolly coat? Probably not. They're prone to wander off and get lost from their flock. Remember the story of Jesus? He has to go after the one because he wandered off. He got lost. They're easily frightened, especially when it's dark. And important for our psalm today, sheep cannot be driven from behind like cattle. In other words, you cannot get behind a group of sheep, a flock of sheep, and try to herd them where you want them to go. With cows, that's not a problem. Get behind them, you can go right to the barn, that's not a problem. This is why those sheepdog trials are so challenging, because you got this dog that's trying to herd sheep, and sheep don't want to be herded. Okay? So what do you have to do? Well, sheep have to be led. They have to have someone in front of them that they're following after, someone they can look to keep them headed in the right direction. Now, because of these traits, they're dumb, they're defenseless, they're directionally impaired, sheep need a shepherd. The sheep would have been totally dependent on this shepherd because the shepherd was involved in every aspect of their care. He guarded the sheep from danger, and danger at that point in time would have been wolves, lions, bears, robbers. I mean, all those things would have been threats. The shepherd would have led the sheep where they needed to go, like we just talked about. He made sure that they had access to food and water. He tended to them when they were sick or they were injured. He rescued them when they became lost. He helped them during lambing. I mean, all these things. The shepherd would have been with his sheep 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. He would have known those sheep well. He would have known their needs well. And he knew them so well and he spent so much time with them that it was probably the case that he gave them names. And before you think this is crazy, well, there's some people in this room that know this isn't crazy, because if you are a dairy farmer especially, if you ask any dairy farmer, it doesn't really matter the size of his herd, if it's somewhat reasonable, they can look at any one of their animals and tell you probably the name, when the last time she had a calf, how good of a milker she is, probably how old she is, if she has 3 working quarters or 4 working quarters. Where's Mike? Mike can attest to this. I saw him do it, actually. So it's not uncommon for a farmer to know his animals. And that's the same case here with the shepherd and his sheep. And just as the shepherd knew his sheep, the sheep knew their shepherd. Like I said, they're spending 24 hours a day, 7 days a week with them. And here's a crazy thing. Despite how stupid sheep are, the one thing that's really interesting is if you put a couple different flocks of sheep in a pen from different shepherds, if you would put them in a pen and then a shepherd would call out, only his sheep would come out and follow him. The other ones would stay put. I thought that was pretty interesting. The shepherd would have taken great care of his sheep. I mean, after all, if they were his sheep, this was his livelihood. So if you had a dead sheep, a lost sheep, a sick sheep, I mean, this was affecting his income. And if they weren't his sheep, he's still going to treat them well because he had to give an accounting for them. And he would probably be punished, or maybe he'd lose his job if something happened to them. So he's going to take great care of them. So that's kind of the agricultural or the farming understanding of shepherd. Let's talk about the other side of this. In the ancient Near East, okay, back at that time, shepherd was also a name given to leaders. In fact, kings were often called the shepherd of their people. And if he was a good king, he realized that it was his responsibility to care for his people, you know, to give them direction, to give them guidance, to care for their needs, to protect them, just like a shepherd would care for his sheep. The Bible specifically references King Saul and King David and calls them people that shepherded the people of Israel. But not all kings were good, of course, and the Bible had pretty stern warnings for them. Jeremiah, the prophet, said this. He said, "Woe to the shepherds," or the leaders, "who are destroying and scattering the sheep of my pasture." In other words, woe to them that are scattering the people of Israel. And anytime you see woe in the Bible, got to watch out. God's not real happy. So this is a big deal. This is a big responsibility. Not only were kings called shepherds, but so were gods. And back early in Genesis, we see that Yahweh was actually called a shepherd. He was called the shepherd of Israel. So back to our psalm, when David, the king of Israel, and David's considered like one of the model kings or the model king of Israel, David, the most powerful person in the land at that time, when he's saying here that the Lord, that Yahweh is my shepherd, he's recognizing that Yahweh is the ultimate shepherd, that Yahweh is really the power behind his throne. Yahweh is the true king. So if David is saying here that the Lord is his shepherd, then essentially David is calling himself a sheep. Kids, for just a moment, I want you to think, if there was any animal in the whole wide world that you could be, think about that for just a moment. What animal would you be? Okay, think about it. All right, what did you come up with? Just yell them out. What? Yell loud. What animal would you be? A deer? What else? A wolverine? A wolf? A horse? Right. So we're thinking of like big animals, like some of them tough animals. Maybe you would have said like a lion or a tiger or a bear and oh my, all these other things. But it probably wouldn't be a sheep, especially after what we just learned about sheep, how weak they are, how stupid they are, how defenseless they are. But that's exactly what David is comparing himself here. He is a sheep. And that next to the shepherd, that next to Yahweh, he doesn't amount to much. I mean, David's basically saying that he's weak, that he's stupid, that he's helpless, that he's the property of the shepherd. And because of this, David knows that he has to rely on Yahweh for protection and for provision and for guidance and all other aspects of his being, just like a sheep would rely on his shepherd. The next part of verse 1 says, "I lack nothing." And other translations say, "I shall not want," or "I shall not be in want." And David is not saying here that he lacks nothing because he has everything he desires. I mean, if he's on the run right now, he probably doesn't have much, right? Maybe the clothes on his back. But rather, he's saying he has everything that he needs. And that's because he has Yahweh, and Yahweh is all he needs. And he's trusting that Yahweh is going to provide. And this is just like the shepherd and his sheep. The shepherd knows what his sheep need, and the shepherd is making the decisions that are best for them. The sheep can trust the shepherd to take care of them, to provide for them. And we're going to see this unfold over the next couple of verses. Verse 2. "He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul." And here we start to see how the shepherd is providing for his sheep. One thing you have to understand about Israel, the countryside of Israel, the undeveloped areas are pretty rough. They're hilly, they're rocky, they're pretty dry, and there's just these scattered areas of grass. And so we're not talking about the rolling farmland of Big Valley here. So the shepherd would have had to lead his flock from one pasture to another. And sometimes they'd have to go on long journeys to get to these different food sources. So it wasn't an easy job to keep your sheep fed. And you also notice it says, "You make me lie down." Well, one thing about sheep is they don't like to lie down when they're hungry.
So I get this picture of this flock of sheep that are hungry, and they've probably had a long journey and so on, and they get to this, finally get to this area of grass, and all they want to do is eat, 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 eat. But the shepherd knows they need their rest as well, so he has to make them lie down and rest. Not only was it difficult to find food at that time, but it was also difficult to find water. And because of the terrain, there aren't very many sources of water. And the sources of water that are there are pretty seasonal, so they dry up. Sometimes they're there, sometimes they're not. So a shepherd would have had to work hard to find these areas of water. And not only did the shepherd have to find the water, but he had to find an area in that stream or whatever that was still. In other words, that the water wasn't moving. You see, sheep are afraid of moving water. They don't like it. It scares them. Surprise, surprise. So if a shepherd would have gotten to a stream and it was moving, he would have actually had taken rocks. He would have dammed up an area so that it would be still, okay, quiet, so that his sheep would feel comfortable in drinking. And it's just another way that a shepherd knew his sheep's needs, and he provided for them. So David, no doubt, has seen Yahweh's provision for his needs. You know, as he's on the lamb, you know, a little bit of sheep humor there. He's likely seen Yahweh's provision of food and water as they're traveling and away from the comforts of home. But I think it's more than that. I think that it's more than just physical nourishment. Yahweh has refreshed David's soul. And I think it's reflected in this psalm. You know, David is being comforted by the fact that Yahweh knows his needs. And he's able to meet those needs even in his difficult situation. Moving right along. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. This right path expression implies that it's the correct path. In other words, it's the path that gets the sheep where they need to go. It's the path that the shepherd has chosen for his sheep. If they don't follow the path, if they don't follow the shepherd where he's leading them, the sheep end up going the wrong way and getting lost. If you've ever looked at a farm, you understand what I say when I say a cow path. And you find these a lot of times in the pasture where the cows are, and they're basically walkways. It's the walkways that the cows will travel on repeatedly, going from one part of the field to another, or maybe going from the field into the barn. And they're really heavily used, so they're usually dirt. They're very easily distinguishable when you look at the field. The cow path is the path to get the cows where they need to go, right? The path is typically probably the quickest, easiest way for them to get from point A to point B. And this is kind of the same idea here with the shepherd and the sheep. You know, the shepherd likely travels to some of the same spots throughout the year. So these paths are probably well-worn, easily distinguishable, and they were the right path to get the sheep where they need to go. But not only would these maybe have been the easiest path or the quickest path, but these paths probably would have also kept the sheep out of trouble. The right path kept them safe. A shepherd, you know, walking along this worn path would more easily have been able to see danger along the path rather than trying to trailblaze through the weeds, okay, going off the path. The shepherd knew that if the sheep went off the path, they'd risk getting themselves into trouble. He knew maybe that there were some rocks that they couldn't see, and if a sheep slipped on those rocks and fell over, they could injure themselves. Side note, sheep sometimes have a lot of wool on them. If they get flipped over on their back, they'll actually die because they can't flip themselves back. Just an interesting fact. He knew that if you went off the path, maybe there was a hole that couldn't easily be seen, and maybe they would break their leg. He knew that maybe snakes would be hiding off the path that they couldn't see and end up biting the shepherd or the sheep, making them sick. He knew that, man, there's probably Lyme disease ticks all over the place. You got to stay on the path. Don't know. When the shepherd is going to all these great lengths, you know, to keep his sheep in the right direction and to keep them safe, he's really doing it for what's called his name's sake. And in Hebrew culture back then, your personal name was thought to reveal a lot about you. And it meant having a good name meant having a good reputation. This isn't too far different from today. If I say the name Billy Graham, I think one image will pop into your mind. And for those of you who knew Ted Bundy is, if I say that name, it's going to be completely different. So name and reputation were really important. The shepherd, by properly caring for his sheep, he'd be building and protecting his name. He'd be building up his reputation. He'd be showing others he was trustworthy and that he was a hard worker and he was skilled at his job. He'd want to be known as a good shepherd, just like the good shepherds before him. That's what he would want to be known. That's his name's sake. And looking at David here with the psalm, David recognizes that Yahweh is the one that's leading him on this right path. And it probably wasn't the path that David would have chosen, because, you know, who chooses to have your son trying to kill you? It wasn't David's path. It was Yahweh's path, the shepherd's path. But David trusts that this path is somehow right for him because the shepherd chose it. And through his journey, David realizes that somehow he trusts that Yahweh's name is going to be glorified, that Yahweh's reputation is somehow going to be strengthened through all this. In verse 4, David goes from speaking about a shepherd to speaking directly to the shepherd, speaking directly to Yahweh. And here's what he says. He says, "Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me." Other translations call this the valley of the shadow of death. This is quite a departure from some of the earlier verses. We're talking about green pastures and still waters and the right path. And if we're in the middle of a movie, right now the soundtrack changes, right? And it goes from like this nice little melody to like this dark and ominous, like dum, 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 you know, something like Minions or whatever. So what is this darkest valley? Well, during the flock's migration in search of food and water, they had to pass through these areas called wadis. So say that's a fun word, wadi. 1, 2, 3, everybody say it. 1, 2, 3, wadi. Okay, so what's a wadi? Wadi is a stream bed that what would have happened is the torrent of rains, like when the spring rains or whatever would have come, they would start to cause a groove in the valley. And over time, these grooves could have gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. And some of them actually turned into canyons. And show them a picture of that canyon there next. So this one's a pretty big. This is a wadi, okay? You can see how steep those cliffs are. And the bottom of these wadis, they would have been very hot. It would have been difficult also to maneuver your flock, especially if you had to go up and down the sides. Now, obviously, you probably couldn't go up and down those sides, but in other areas, the rocks aren't very steady. So going up and down into these wadis and out of these wadis would have been very difficult. There wouldn't have been any real sources of food and water in these wadis. And here's the interesting thing. In the bottom, when you're in the bottom of one of the wadis, especially one this big, you have shadows created by the surrounding cliffs. So the Hebrew word that's used here in the psalm is actually samawet. And sal, it means shadow. And mawet is death. But when you put the two words together, it means the shadowiest of all shadows. And it's really a term of exaggeration. But it's emphasizing that this is dangerous. That this is a place of danger for these flocks as they travel through these areas. So, you know, what's the danger? What's the evil? Because it says, I will fear no evil. Well, what's associated with these wadis that's so scary? Well, a couple things. Number one, if you get down in these wadis and you get lost or something, well, it's pretty easy to imagine you could die of dehydration. You hear people all the time go out west, they're not prepared, they go hiking and they die. That happens. Since the walls of these wadis tended to be pretty steep and not steady, if you're traveling up and down them, it's pretty easy for you or your flock to fall, injure yourselves. And if you do, you're probably not calling in medevac. That's probably not going to happen. Also, thieves or robbers, you know, this would have been a prime opportunity for them to take advantage of the shepherd. You're already penned in kind of on two sides. So if they had a couple guys and they wanted to do something to you or your flock, this would be a great time to do it. Yet despite all these possibilities, despite all these evils, all these dangers, the sheep didn't need to fear because the shepherd was with them. He was watching out for them. He was protecting them. A big reason why the shepherd could feel secure on their journeys through these dark valleys was because the shepherd had some gear that he carried along. In this verse, we read about two things. We read about the rod and the staff, and he might have carried a leatherman as well, but it doesn't say that, so we can't assume. But some scholars would argue that these two words are just for the same thing, but actually the words in Hebrew are two separate words. There's a difference. And let me tell you, the Hebrew word for rod is sabet, and it describes a short club-like device that would have been used as a weapon against wild animals or thieves. And it would have been used basically to give people a beatdown or things a beatdown if a beatdown was in order, right? It wouldn't be used on the sheep because its whole purpose, its whole intent was to cause pain, okay, to stop an attack or to repel an attack. And I have with me a nightstick. I mean, this is basically what I think of when I think of the rod that they're referring to. You know, this is used for giving people a beatdown, I guess. It's fallen out of favor. I didn't realize this, but police don't use this much anymore. They use a collapsible baton. But just this is what I think of when I think of the rod. In a royal context, in other words, when you talk about kings and you talk about this rod or this sabet, it was actually the king's scepter. You've all seen pictures of a king holding this little thing. It had a knob at the end. But that was symbolizing his power, his authority, okay? Kind of the same concept. The staff, or the mizenet in Hebrew, was a longer, thinner pole used to guide and direct the sheep. This is what was called like the shepherd's crook, and it was similar to a cane. You know, this is what I think of when I think of the staff. I remember my grandfather, other grandfather, who was a farmer. He always had one of these in the barn. And he did that because he used it to guide the cows. If they were going down the wrong aisle, he would make sure they went down a different way. Or if two of them were trying to get in the same spot, he would use that to separate them. But he wouldn't use it as punishment. He would just use it to guide them into the right stall. And it's the same concept with sheep. It would be used to guide them along or maybe help them if they got in trouble. And at night, what would happen is the shepherd would have his sheep pass under this staff one by one. And we'll talk about more on that in a minute. They'd pass under it one by one, and I think of the limbo, but it's probably not quite right. But he would use that, and he would count them as they went under it, and he would kind of examine them to make sure that everything looked okay. So while the shepherd used the rod to handle situations kind of outside the flock, the staff was used to handle situations more inside the flock. He was really equipped to handle anything that would come his way. And David here in the Psalms is recognizing that Yahweh is able to provide both protection, the rod, and guidance, the staff, even in the middle of his difficult situations. David does not fear. Even though he's walking through some of the most challenging, some of the darkest times of his life, he needn't be afraid. Why? Well, because Yahweh, the great shepherd, is with him and has everything under control. Verse 5, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. There are, as I read, there's some different opinions here about whether David is still talking about the shepherd and sheep theme or whether he went somewhere else with this. And I think it makes more sense to stick with the shepherd sheep theme. So that's what we're going to do this morning. And you're sitting here, so you don't have much of a choice. So that's what we're going to do. We think of a table as something where you sit at and eat, you know, a piece of furniture. But a table in geographical terms simply means a flat area among hills. These tables would have been a preferred place for the sheep to rest, whether that was in the middle of their journey or for the night, the nice and flat area. And the sheep fold would actually be probably built on one of these tables. Now, what's a sheep fold? A sheepfold is basically a rock wall, so it's an enclosure, rocks piled on top of each other, like this picture. Go ahead and put that picture up. Austin, there you go. Okay. So on top of the wall, so here's kind of an older sheepfold. This one's round. So on top of the wall, there may have been thorns or briars kind of as extra protection. And on one side, there'd be an opening. You can kind of see that at the top. There would be an opening, and this was known as the door. The sheep could go in and out of that area. So at the end of a day of grazing, the shepherd would lead his flock back to the fold for the night. And the sheep would pass through the door under his crook, like we talked about. And once all the sheep were inside the fold, the shepherd would actually lay across the opening. That's where he would sleep. So that if anything wanted to get to the sheep, they had to come through him first. He was standing in the way of any kind of potential harm. And so if necessary, he would fight, maybe even die, for his sheep. So it makes sense to me that preparing a table might describe how the shepherd is preparing the fold. You know, he found a flat area. He found the table. He built the walls. Maybe he put the briars up around it. And then he left an opening. And he did it to provide protection for the sheep, from their enemies, from the wild animals, from the thieves. And some of these folds were only temporary structures. If the shepherd was having to lead his flock far away, they might have to build multiple ones of these as they got further and further from home. So he probably got pretty good at it. The phrase of preparing a table had even more significance. Back in ancient Israel, if you invited someone to eat at your table, now we are talking about furniture, if you invited someone into your house to eat at your table, you were assuming all responsibility for their security. You guaranteed protection for them while they were at your table. And so the shepherd, in preparing a table for his sheep, is guaranteeing their protection. As the sheep would enter through the door, like we said, the shepherd would inspect them. And he would take oil. Olive oil would have been the common oil at the time. And he would have used that to treat any wounds that he saw because it had some healing properties. Oil was also applied or anointed to a sheep's face and to their horns because it helped to keep the flies away. Okay? aside from oil, a shepherd would have also been carrying a cup with him, and he would have used it for his own personal water. But the picture that I get here is, you know, if you have a sick sheep, not only is he going to apply oil to their wounds, but maybe he's going to get them something to drink out of his cup, and he would make sure they had plenty of water. And this is just that image I get of this overflowing cup. I can't prove that's what happened, just what makes sense to me. So David is recognizing here that Yahweh is protecting him, even though there are those around him that wish to bring him harm, his son and others. Yahweh is able to heal him, able to heal David, both body and soul, and we just know that this overflows, this healing overflows. Last verse, surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. And this is where David becomes a little more reflective. You know, as a shepherd back in the day, David had lots of time to think. He was out with his flock, probably by himself. He had been reviewing the day's events and the day's happenings. And now, as a grown man, I think David's kind of looking back on all these life experiences. He's reflecting on where he's been, where he's come from. And he can see how Yahweh has been with him every step of the way, including now. You know, how Yahweh's goodness, how his love have been abundant through the good times and the bad times. And David has certainly had a lot of each. And knowing how good and loving his Yahweh is, and knowing how much he desires his relationship with him, you know, David is anticipating spending eternity, spending forever with his God, with his shepherd. Whew, okay, that was a lot of info in a short period of time. So let's sing as we transition to the next spot. Let's do our sheep song again. Ready? 1, 2, 3. I just want to be a sheep. Ba, 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 ba. Keep going. I just want to be... I pray the Lord my soul to keep. I just want to be a sheep. Ba, 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 ba. There's a reason why I don't lead worship. Okay. As we've been learning, psalms were written for worship. And early on, they would have been sung by the Levites. And they were simply the caretakers of the temple. They would have been sung during sacrifices, during feasts and festivals. They were being sung to Yahweh, of course. Much like we sing songs of worship today, it was the same principle. So I need us to imagine, or I want us to imagine just for a few minutes, what we would have thought, what would we have been thinking of, what would have been brought to our minds if we were Jews back in the temple and this psalm was being sung, okay? How would we have used this psalm to relate to Yahweh? What would it have said that would have drawn us closer to Him? We have to remember first off that most of the people who have been hearing this psalm, most of the people in the temple audience would have known a thing or two about being a shepherd. Shepherding was a very traditional occupation back in Israel. In fact, it was one of the earliest occupations. We learn about it first in Genesis 4 because Abel, who is Adam and Eve's son, Abel was a shepherd. We know that Abraham's family, they were all shepherds. Moses was a shepherd when God called him to lead the people out of Egypt. David was a shepherd. And just as a side note, it wasn't just men who were shepherds. There were shepherdesses Rachel, who would be Jacob's wife. She was a shepherdess. So even if the Jews hearing the psalm weren't themselves shepherds, chances are they had someone in the family, maybe past or present, who was. So they understood this imagery that David was making about shepherd and his sheep. And what did they think back to? Well, I think it's really likely that they remembered how Jehovah had shepherded them out of Egypt, out of slavery to the promised land about 400 years earlier. You know, how he had provided manna to eat and water to drink, you know, just like a shepherd would have provided those green pastures and still waters. How Yahweh went before them during this journey. He led them, a cloud by day, fire by night, just as a shepherd would lead his sheep along those right paths. I think they remembered how Yahweh told them not to be afraid, even though the condition of the desert were brutal, you know, just like those wadis. And I'm sure they traveled through some of those wadis. They probably remembered how Moses carried a staff, and maybe it was even a staff that he had had when he was a shepherd. And he used that staff to perform miraculous signs and things for the people. But it was a way to show God's or Yahweh's power. They remember back how Yahweh protected them from their enemies when they were going to the promised land. And just as a shepherd protected his sheep. So they had all these things that they could be remembered of. And as they remembered about how God was with them, how Yahweh was with them during that whole journey and how he led them to the promised land, I think it drew them into worship of their God. Not only was Psalm 23 a song that could be sung back in worship in the ancient times, but it's also something we can look at today and we can treat it as a psalm of worship. But for us, it takes on a little bit of a bigger meaning. And I just want to read something to you. This is really neat. As we continue on. This is from the Jesus Storybook Bible. If you have kids and you do not know what this is, you've never seen this, you need to invest a little bit of money and get this. It is an amazing book. But this is Psalm 23 according to the Jesus Storybook Bible. Let me just read it to you. It says, David's songs are like prayers. They are called psalms, and this one is called the Song of the Shepherd. It's probably number one on the psalm charts. See, I told you. And it goes like this. It says, God is my shepherd, and I am his little lamb. He feeds me. He guides me. He looks after me. I have everything I need. Inside, my heart is very quiet as lying still in soft green grass, in a meadow by a little stream. Even when I walk through the dark, scary, lonely places, I won't be afraid because my shepherd knows where I am. He is here with me. He keeps me safe. He rescues me and makes me strong and brave. He is getting wonderful things ready for me, especially for me, everything I ever dreamed of. He fills my heart so full of happiness, I can't hold it inside. Wherever I go, I know God's never stopping, never giving up, unbreaking, always and forever love will go to. And here's the part I want us to pay particular attention to. God gave David that song to sing to his people so they could know that he loved them and would always look after them, like a shepherd loves his sheep. And one day, God was going to do something that would inspire thousands upon thousands of new songs. God was going to show his people once and for all just how much he loved them. Another shepherd was coming. A greater shepherd. He would be called the Good Shepherd. And this shepherd was going to lead all of God's lambs back to the place where they had always belonged, close to God's heart. We can have a new perspective on Psalm 23 because we know the other shepherd. We know the greater shepherd that was talking about. Because about 1,000 years after that psalm was written, Jesus is on the scene, right? He's in the middle of his ministry. He knows the Jewish scriptures. He knows the words to those psalms. He knew Psalm 23. And he often used them in his teaching to connect his ministry to the people's traditions. And in one of those teachings, he dropped a bombshell. And of course, this is Jesus. He dropped lots of bombshells. But he did it right in front of the Pharisees. Remember, Pharisees were some of the teachers of the law. And they didn't like this Jesus fellow because he didn't follow their rules. He didn't fit the image of the Messiah that they thought was coming. And they didn't believe when he said that he was the Son of God. But in John 10, this is what Jesus says. This is what we find him saying to the Pharisees, to the crowd. This is what he says. This is the bombshell. I am the good shepherd. It's like saying this. Hey, Pharisees. Hey, everybody. Everybody, listen up. You know that whole Lord is my shepherd song you've been singing in the temple during worship? You know how it speaks of Yahweh, you know, being a shepherd and taking care of his sheep and loving his sheep and all that? Remember that song you sing? Well, guess what? I'm the shepherd. I'm the good shepherd. I'm Yahweh. In that same passage, if you read it, it's really neat. It really connects the dots. In that same passage, Jesus talks about being the gate for his sheep. Remember that? He talks about calling his sheep by name and leading them out. Remember, they knew his name. And how the sheep would follow him because they know his voice. He talked about laying down his life for the sheep. All these references back to Psalm 23. And so in this short sermon that we see in John, Jesus is telling his audience that he's come to care for his people. To know everything about them, to know their needs, their hurts, all the details of their lives. He's come to protect them from those who want to do them harm. He's come to lead them and guide them and direct them. He's come to be in a relationship with them that is this intimate relationship. And he's come to die for them in this ultimate show of sacrifice for those he loves. He's saying, the good shepherd has come and I am him. I called this psalm a psalm of provision. Because I believe it shows us various areas in our lives where God provides for us. And as I looked through the psalm, I tried to kind of boil it down to three distinct areas. And here they are. Number one, I think God provides for our physical needs. As seen with the shepherd providing his sheep with food and water and shelter, I think that God does the same thing for us. I think all that we have comes from him. We can trust that he's going to provide for us. And in Matthew, we learn that do not worry, where it says, do not worry about food to eat, because he feeds the birds of the air. And it says, you know, don't worry about the clothes that you wear because he clothes the lilies, the flowers of the field. And aren't we so much more valuable than birds, right? And we're so much more valuable than flowers. But hey, I'm a warrior, so this is hard for me, and I'm sure it's hard for you too. But God is asking us to trust him that he's going to provide for our physical needs. And I wanted to share two stories with you this morning about how God provides for physical needs of my family, our family. Steph grew up poor in northern New Jersey. Her mom was a single mom. She worked full time. Her mom struggled to put food on the table for Steph and her two sisters. And at one point, Steph said they had to sell their car just to afford groceries to be able to eat. In one of the places that they lived growing up, the landlord would save money by keeping the heat extremely low during the winter. So Steph and her sisters would have to dress under the covers, and then they would eat next to the open oven just in order to stay warm. But Steph's family trusted that God would provide, and they were very generous in giving what they did have to other people. And God provided for them in multiple instances, multiple times. They would come home, and there would be bags of groceries on their doorstep. Someone would walk up to them in church and hand them a check. Someone would hand them an anonymous envelope of money. God provided for their physical needs. The other story concerns Steph and me. And contrary to what many people think, my brother included, Steph and I aren't rolling in the dough. We have good jobs, but they've come at a price. Those jobs have come at a price. My quick calculations, our schooling combined probably cost $400,000 to $500,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. We're going to be paying on those school loans until we retire. We've also taken out loans for my business. We lost all those years in schooling that we could have been making money, all those things. And I'm not complaining, but you need a little bit of perspective for what I'm about to tell you. You have to understand that we watch our finances very carefully because of all of these expenses, all these loans that we have. There's too much month at the end of the money. Do you guys know that song? It's a great country song. Too much month at the end of the money. And at times, we've been hit with unexpected expenses, and that makes things difficult for us because we have everything pretty much where it needs to go. But we trust God, and I trust him with our finances. I trust him to provide for us. And whenever we get paid, it's the first check we write. We write the first check to God, and everything else comes after. Last year, Steph had some surgery scheduled, and she was supposed to miss work for a week. Okay, we planned for that missing for a week, but instead, Steph was out for 3 weeks. That was a whole paycheck that we didn't count on missing, and like I said, we watch our money very carefully, so that was kind of a big deal for us. And then something crazy happened. Steph received a bonus from where she works. She works for Geisinger. She received a bonus that we were not expecting. You know those surveys they ask you to fill out? Yeah, they actually mean something, okay? So she received a bonus. That bonus was almost dollar for dollar what we missed out on during those 2 weeks that we hadn't anticipated. It's not a coincidence. That was God's provision for us. So I think God provides for our physical needs. Number two, I think God provides for our psychological needs. And as we relate to our psalm here today, I'm talking about how God provides us with direction and with peace and with comfort. Like the shepherd leading his sheep, I think God will lead us where we need to go. And notice I didn't say where we want to go. I said where we need to go, and we'll talk about that in a minute. You know, maybe he leads us to a relationship, or maybe he leads us away from a current one. Maybe he leads us to a new job or a new career or maybe a new location, a new town. Maybe he leads us to spend less time at work, spend more time at home. Maybe he leads us into the mission field. You got to remember, he has the big picture. You know, he knows what's possible if we simply follow his direction. And he also knows the dangers that we're going to face if we take our eyes off of him and try to do it alone. There's also this sense of peace that sheep can feel when they are under the careful watch of the shepherd. And we can feel that same peace. It comes from trusting that God knows or God wants what is best for us, and from knowing that he sees the big picture and we don't, and we're not always going to understand that. That's okay. The peace that comes from the fact that our God is bigger than any of the stuff we face, no matter how dark that valley is. He's bigger than that, and he's well equipped to get us through it. It's peace because our God never leaves us. He never forsakes us, and no matter how much we screw up, mess up, throw up, he's still there. And nothing we do is going to make him love us any less. And I love that quote from Sean. And like a shepherd caring for his sheep when they are sick or injured, God provides for our psychological needs, I think, by comforting us. And I don't have to explain to any of you that life is hard. People that we love die. Pets that we love die. Jobs are lost. Friendships are broken. Sickness happens. Tests are failed. Mistakes are made. But God knows our pain. And not only does he know it, but he understands it. And he wants to pull alongside us. And he wants to comfort us and give us the strength to walk through it. During the Here's a Story series last year, when we shared a little bit of our backgrounds, I spoke about the year I graduated from college, and it was a really difficult year. That was the year that I kind of decided that medical school wasn't for me, and so I was kind of left not knowing what career path I was heading down. And Steph had told me at the end of my college time that she just wanted to be friends and nothing more. And you can see how that turned out for her. My grandfather and my dad died within 3 months of each other. This is a couple months after I graduated from college. They died within a few months of each other. And so it's an understatement to say I was hurting that year. I was in need of direction and peace and comfort. And in those darkest hours, I could only turn to God and ask for help. And I did lots of times. And it wasn't an immediate result. It took time. In fact, it took 2 years, I think, before I knew that I wanted to go to optometry school, before I had a peace about that. But God came through, and he provided for my psychological needs. Number three, spiritual needs. And yes, I did a Seanism here. I put a P. You'll see this here in just a second. There you go. A P at the beginning, spiritual, just like Sean does. Huh? God has promised us eternal life. He's provided a way for us to dwell in the house of the Lord forever, just like the end of the psalm says. And he sent Jesus, his only son, so whoever believes in him will not perish, but have everlasting life, have eternal life. And without this, we'd spend eternity separated from God. And but it's not just eternity where I think that God provides for our spiritual needs. I think that he also wants us to have security now, feeling his presence and his protection while we're here on earth. We've talked about how the shepherd had to stand between the sheep and their enemies, between the sheep and the thieves, between the sheep and the wild animals. And Scripture is very clear. It says that our enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour. And I don't think it's coincidence that it uses those words. But there's this constant spiritual battle happening, and I think the devil or Satan wants nothing less than to wreak destruction on God's people. So we can be assured, we can feel secure, knowing that our God is able to protect us from anything that Satan wants to throw our way. Our God has already won the war. Good has already triumphed over evil, and we can rest in that. Physical, psychological, spiritual. Three areas where God can provide for us, and I need you to notice that it says can. I believe that God has the power and the ability to provide anything for us. But I also believe that he doesn't always provide everything that we think he should. And he certainly provides different things to different people at different times. Why? Why does it seem sometimes that God isn't providing for us? Well, I didn't go too far into this, but a couple of things that I thought of. One reason, the next one there, Austin. One reason is that God doesn't provide is because he sees the big picture. What we want, what we think we need, isn't what God knows that we need. He may be holding out on providing for us because he knows there's something better up ahead. I think about my relationship with Steph, and going back even further, even back when I was in high school, I wanted to be in a serious relationship. I wanted to start dating someone who would eventually become my wife, and I wasn't like Pastor Sean, who liked to date around. That wasn't my thing, okay? I wanted to meet someone, date them, marry them. I was interested in that long-term connection, and it was very frustrating for me when some of those relationships didn't pan out that I thought were headed in that direction. But with hindsight, I see why. I see why God didn't provide when I wanted him to provide. It's because he had something better in store. He had Steph. She was the better. Another reason I think that God doesn't provide is that we aren't where we need to be in our relationship with him. He isn't providing because we aren't following. He's using our struggles, this lack of provision. He's making us struggle a bit, kind of as a wake-up call. He's basically saying, hey, I want you closer to me. I want you closer to me. So he's not providing because we aren't following. And then lastly, God doesn't provide because I don't know the answer to this one, actually. This is one of those big questions that doesn't have an easy answer. And when I was preparing this, the first thing that came to my mind is, why does God provide for me? with food and shelter and water? And why does he provide for most Americans with all those things? And yet people every day across the world die because they don't have those basic necessities. And I don't know the answer to that. And someday when we're hanging out with God, I think that's a question that we could ask. But for now, I think it's just a matter of trust. We have to somehow trust that it's part of his plan. And we don't understand his plan. So knowing all this, you know, what should our response be? Knowing that God provides for us in a multitude of ways, what do we need to do? And I'm going to keep it really easy for you. We need to choose to follow the shepherd. And I'm not simply talking about acknowledging that God is real or that God is who he says he is. I'm not talking about head knowledge here. I'm going a lot deeper than that, a lot further than that. This is choosing to be a sheep. This is choosing to, or allowing God to be your shepherd. This is trusting that God will provide for you exactly what you need when you need it. This is trusting that he knows the big picture and he's going to provide guidance and direction to lead you where he wants you to go. This is trusting that he knows everything about you and that he still cares about you and loves you more than you'll ever know, despite knowing all those things. This is trusting that he can comfort you when you're hurting and he's able to bring you healing. This is trusting that he's prepared a place for you to be with him for eternity, and he's provided us a way to get there. And yes, it is the big choice, you know, the big choice of saying, yes, I want to follow after the shepherd. I want to be a Christ follower. And yes, that's very important. But it's also those everyday decisions about choosing to follow the shepherd's leading or the shepherd's direction or choosing to do it on your own. And I can tell you which of those is going to work out better for you. And it's not the second one. But Justin, come on, you don't know my past, Justin. You don't know how difficult my life's been. You don't know how I've been hurt. You don't know how I've hurt others. You don't know how far I am from God. You don't know the mistakes I've made. You're right. I don't. But the shepherd does. And he still wants you to follow him. Isaiah says, we all, like sheep, have gone astray. And it doesn't matter how far we've strayed. The shepherd still wants us to come back and follow him. I'll close with this statement that I read as I was preparing for my teaching. It's kind of a neat way to tie everything together. Remember, when people talk about the Old Covenant refers to the Old Testament when people had to atone for their sins with animals. They sacrificed animals to cover up their sins in front of God. When it talks about the New Covenant, Jesus was on the scene. Jesus died once and for all as a sacrifice for our sins. And this is what the statement, this is what the comment is. Under the Old Covenant, the sheep died for the shepherd. Okay? Under the Old Covenant, the sheep died for the shepherd. But under the New Covenant, the shepherd died for the sheep. So we can meet and be with the shepherd for eternity.